This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Roads Rewind.
Right now, I got a special guest. I want to welcome to the program. He is currently seeking the seat that is held by Raphael Warnock. He is running in the Republican primary for senator against such luminaries as Gary Black and Herschel Walker. His name is Latham Sadler. And I have to kind of pause there for a minute because I think you're the only non-politician we have in the crowd. Get right up on that. Hold on.
That's right.
Let me move that up for you. Hold on a second. Move, there you go. Just kind of there. Talk right into it. There you go. And here he is. Boom. Say hello, Latham.
Hey, hello, folks. Austin, thank you so much for having me on the show. And it's a treat to be in the studio here with you today.
Now, while he is not a politician, he is a patriot. Spent 8 years in the Navy as a Navy SEAL. He was one of the members of Donald Trump's intelligence team working for the NSA. And that's kind of interesting. We've got a huge NSA contingent here in Augusta that we're not allowed to talk about very much. They're not allowed to talk. We can talk about all we want to. But so your roots in national security are about as strong as they can be.
Well, thank you, Austin. And as we were weighing the decision on whether or not to jump into this race, one of the things that so many Georgians pointed out to me is that our state has a proud tradition of having national security experts in the Senate, all the way back to Richard B. Russell. We had Sam Nunn, who helped us win the Cold War. We had Johnny. We had Saxby. We had David, who understood China. And now, for the first time since World War II, we don't even have a United States senator from our state on the Armed Services Committee. And that's an important thing. And I think what transpired in Afghanistan recently really shows why we need leaders in Washington that actually understand the world and see the threats clearly and will make the right decisions for the country up there.
Well, there's no doubt that most definitely it was a blind spot as far as the Biden administration goes. And you can say whatever you want to about Donald Trump, and he's rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. No way in hell he pulls out of Afghanistan with the Taliban running all over the place. He just wouldn't do it. And you know, somebody said, William, he set the parameters up. No, what he did was he told the Taliban, if you do A, B, C, or D, I'm going to come down and do X, Y, and Z on you. And unfortunately, he was not sitting in the chair when the Taliban started pulling their crap. They knew they could get away with it on Biden, and they did. Simple as that.
That's exactly right, Austin. And there's a couple glaring things from that debacle, but one of them is the timing. I mean, the fact that you announce the withdrawal at the beginning of fighting season and then pull the plug at the height of fighting season and then scratch your head as to how in 11 days the Taliban takes over the country just shows you that these folks making the decisions up there, they have no idea what they're doing. And they fundamentally view the world the way they want it to be rather than the way it actually is. And that's a very dangerous thing when it comes to national security decision making. And then, you know, you'd think they would have factored that in after 20 years of war, and they didn't. And then we leave tens of billions of dollars in equipment to our adversaries. I tell folks on the trail all the time, Austin, that in charge of SEALs and in command, I would have been relieved of command if one of my men had lost one piece of critical equipment. And the fact that there was no accountability whatsoever for leaving all that equipment to our adversaries. And then finally, leaving Americans behind. We don't do that as a country.
I mean, we ran out of Afghanistan like we were being chased by, you know, the father of the bride or something. It was crazy. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like
National embarrassment.
You started, or your political career actually began as an observer. You decided you wanted to get involved in the defense of this country's sovereignty and mission in the world to provide freedom for all when you were a college student and you were watching 9/11 unfold. And then after your days in Georgia, you were a freshman at UGA when that occurred. Then you go to Georgia Tech as a grad student where you become fluent in Persian and Farsi while pursuing a master's degree in international affairs. Was it your language skills that got you involved with the intelligence community?
So it was kind of the more color to the story. The detail behind it is, you know, 9/11 happened while I was at UGA, decided I wanted to try to become a Navy SEAL officer. I met a retired SEAL captain who basically told me, I'm not going to use his language on here, but told me I had no chance of getting selected to become an officer, go to an officer candidate school, and go out to SEAL training. And so that's why I ended up spending my 20s trying to make myself competitive to get there. So that's why I went to Georgia Tech for grad school in international affairs and the Sam Nunn School, started learning Farsi and Dari, lived overseas in Tajikistan, where they also speak the language, lived there for 10 months to become fluent, and then backpacked through Afghanistan as a civilian, all the other stands except for Pakistan. So really got to know that part of the world. And I thought,
do you have any family background that way? Because, by the way, this is just, it is what it is. You could pass. You have an Arab look to you a little bit, in a good way.
It's funny. The beard, I guess, helps.
Yeah,
but the funny thing is, I'm just a good old Georgia boy. But
so you don't have any family connection to that?
No lineage over there at all. So,
And if you don't mind me saying, I think one of the reasons probably the guy was telling you that about the SEALs, you're not a large man.
That's right.
Solid as a rock, but he's not a big. He reminds me of Minnesota Mike 50 years ago. Minnesota Mike's retired military.
Or
too,
longer.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thanks for your service.
Yeah. But you, so you were kind of facing the long odds of making it as a Navy SEAL.
Yes, sir.
I was looking at the step when I was reading your bio and everything. You would have been in the smallest 5% of all Navy SEALs.
It was
as far as weight and height go.
And the guys that make it through, it's interesting. It'll surprise you. I mean, the poster boys typically don't make it. It's an interesting mix of folks that end up standing in the end of that process, where they weed out about 90% of you. And in my class, we had two MMA fighters quit, but then a guy that was a drummer in a band made it with me. I mean, it's just, there's no rhyme or reason.
Other than a lot of drummers, and that makes sense to me, yeah. So 8 years as a Navy SEAL.
Yes, sir.
And were you able to see any, close and up front battle at duty during the Persian Gulf situation?
So I was pretty fortunate.
Or the Middle East situation.
In my time, because I became fluent in both Farsi and Dari, Farsi, what they speak in Iran, Dari, what they speak in Afghanistan, they actually immediately deployed me to Afghanistan right after I became a SEAL. Proud of the work we did there.
What year was that?
That would have been spring of 2014.
Gotcha.
And, interestingly, at that time, the Taliban knew that if there were forces that were coming after him at night, it was special operations units. And candidly, most of the time, they were too cowardly to fight. And so most of the work being done over there by special operations units were capture missions.
Isn't it true? I mean, I'm just reminding everybody this in case they'd never heard it before, that the last 20 years that we've been over there, there's virtually no traditional fighting going on. It's either them launching a guerrilla attack on somebody or them being attacked in a sniper sense. I mean, there are no meetings on the battlefield the way that we used to have in World War II or even Vietnam, for that matter.
That's exactly right. Both given the who you're fighting, I mean, that's just that they've grown up with warfare, throughout generations. But then the terrain also, it's just prime and ripe for unconventional warfare. And so, no, there's no traditional fighting in Afghanistan.
And right. The good news is, I guess, that you can wage those types of fights with many fewer people. The bad news is you never know when it's going to hit you. It can hit you literally at any moment, or you could get a phone call and in an hour be in a firefight.
That's right. That's right. And that's the advantage special operations units have over there. I mean, we were able to have the element of surprise and do that to them.
So when was it you made the transition to the Trump intelligence team?
Yeah, so at the end of 2016, I was actually overseas on some presidentially approved missions in another part of the world.
For President Obama's term.
Correct. Right. Gotcha. President Trump gets elected, and they were building out his national security team, and I got a call to come up there and interview. Didn't know what the job was or anything.
As a sitting member of the United States military?
That's
still?
Right.
I didn't know they did that. That's interesting.
Yes, sir. So the National Security Council at the White House, you've got presidential appointees up there, like the National Security Advisor and a number of other appointees. But then also who makes up that staff are members of the uniformed services, members of the intelligence community, and members of the State Department.
What rank were you at that point?
I was actually because I got such a late start at the military, I was a lieutenant.
Right, now, this is interesting, and it just occurs to me. James Bond, for all that he was a commander in the Navy. In the British Navy.
Yep.
So you are a lieutenant, or was it in the Navy, I guess?
Right, that's right.
Working an intelligence position for the President of the United States.
That's exactly
makes
right.
Makes sense. Commander Bond.
Yeah. Well, and I finished out as
Lieutenant Sadler. Yeah.
That's right. I finished out as a lieutenant commander, and it was an interesting role, though, Austin, because It was overseeing the Black Ops portfolio, where there's a small set of missions that require the president's approval after SecDef assigns them. And so I was that guy at the White House after Secretary Mattis signed off on these missions. They came to me. I vetted them. I'd just been out on these types of missions a few months prior. And then I'd make the recommendation to the National Security Advisor whether or not we should send the troops out to do the quiet work for the country. And I can tell you, during my time up there, I mean, our adversaries felt American might and strength every single day, and unfortunately, it's clear that they're probably not feeling that these days.
Latham Sadler is an American veteran. He is seeking the seat that is currently held by Raphael Warnock, and go to his website, LathamSadler.com. You'll see his entire background, some pictures from his military service. He was working in the Trump White House, as you heard, in the intelligence wing for a period. Were you there the entire presidency, or as soon as they called you up, I guess? Were you there until he was done?
I was there the first 2.5 years.
Two and a half years?
Of his administration.
So I have to ask you, because then this is the elephant in the room for anybody involved in this race. You are literally taking on the most popular man in the history of the state of Georgia. I mean, somebody said, well, is he as big as Hank Aaron? Yeah, because Hank Aaron wasn't from Georgia originally. So here you are taking on Herschel Walker. I'm going to leave Gary Black out of it, but for a minute. How do you do that?
Yeah, so, you know, I do find it ironic, Austin, that I've got to defeat my childhood football hero to try and set this country on the right track. But, you know, I actually knew Herschel was going to be getting in the race. He and I have gotten to know each other. We've had a handful of conversations since my launch. And, you know, look, the way I view it is, I mean, he can run the hell out of football. He's got all the yardage, but I'm the man with the mileage in this race when it comes to actual experience to serve effectively as a United States Senator. As we discussed earlier, I mean, the times are so serious, especially on the national security front, where we desperately need leaders up there that understand this stuff, have the background in it. And I've been blessed in my career and to have that experience in a short amount of time. That's the other thing, is I'm 38 years old. Candidly, I thought that was going to be a disadvantage in this race. And immediately on the trail, I learned I could not have been more wrong. People are really, really, really want a next generation leader for this role. And I can deliver that. I mean, the average age in the Senate's 63 years old. We got to get fresh blood up there. I tell people all the time, I'm pretty sure the fastest moving thing in the world is the advancement of technology. And I'm pretty sure the slowest moving thing in the world is the United States government. And you look at these committee hearings, and these guys have no idea on how to manage big tech. And it matters to our everyday lives, and it matters to the defense of our country. And we need folks that have that experience up there. And look, I look at this race, and Herschel, it seems, sealed the field for me. And so now it's a three-way race, it sounds like, as you mentioned, Gary Black as well. Two of us are going to go to a runoff, and I'm confident I'm going to be one of those two. And obviously, I'm biased, but in a head-to-head scenario with either one of those guys, I'm betting on me, and I really do look forward to that.
All right. Well, he is running for Senate. You can check out his personal background at LathamSadler.com.
Thanks for listening to The Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to The Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.